This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We are about 35 minutes away from Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker delivering his annual State of the State and budget address. Owing to the pandemic, it's going to be delivered virtually this year. The Illinois House and Senate have canceled their remaining session days for the month of February, so he's going to be delivering a virtual speech. Stay tuned. We will be carrying that live on this NPR station. We're dedicating our entire hour to talking about the budget today. A little later this hour, I'm going to be speaking with a researcher from the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois, as well as NPR Illinois' State House reporter about what we can expect in the budget. But first, I am joined now by Illinois Senate Minority Leader Dan McConkie. He's a Republican from Hawthorne Woods in the suburbs of Chicago. Leader McConkie, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Brian.
So the governor's office is projecting a $3 billion drop in tax collections from this year to the next budget year. How do we make that up?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that we need to be doing, reforms that we have advocated for years that, you know, state government has really ignored, right? It is just not embrace the types of policies and things that everyday families are doing. Look, you know, families have very real budget problems as well, especially now during the pandemic. We've all had to, you know, tighten our belts and do what we can to make sure that, you know, we can ride things through. And it's my hope that the governor, you know, is going to really take the same tactic, right? And he's not going to dramatically kind of increase taxes on businesses or on other struggling entities who are trying just to, you know, survive right now during this environment. And, you know, I hope that we're going to see relief for working families and small businesses, especially who've been struggling right now through this pandemic. We all know people who fit into that category. And it is my hope that state government finally stands up in this important way.
So one of the things I love about budget season is Democrats and Republicans have ways of talking about the same ideas, but using completely different words. So I'm going to try and bridge one of those gaps here. You just mentioned increasing taxes on businesses. I think what we're expecting to hear from the governor and the Democratic side is closing corporate loopholes. A couple of examples from published reports include things like capping what's known as the retailer's discount at $1,000 a month. This is stores. When we buy things, they collect sales tax. You know, you can see that on the receipt. The stores get to keep a portion of that money for the work of doing that. And that applies to the mom and pop pharmacy in small town Illinois, but also Target and Walmart and big retailers. So that would be capped. That's one proposal. There's also moving up the expiration of a tax break for biodiesel fuels. What do you think of what we've seen in published reports about what the governor is going to be proposing in terms of, as he puts it, closing corporate loopholes?
Well, I'm not sure what all is going to be in those yet. I mean, part of the issue that we have is wanting to make sure that, you know, there's, as you well noted, there's a lot of issues in regards to terms. I am afraid that there's going to be things in there that the governor is going to call corporate loopholes that at the end of the day are really tax incentives that help grow businesses, that help maintain jobs. But we're going to have to see what those details are. There's a lot of concern I think that businesses have, especially in this current environment, the idea that we're going to be making it harder on them in order to maintain businesses in this state. I mean, you know, we're not an island. You know, there's lots of other states around us that have continually working to poach businesses to get businesses to move. I certainly hope that the governor is going to take the competition that we face from other states around us and even across the country into account in any sort of changes in business tax law that he's looking at.
There was a scenario where the conversation we would be having, and we, I mean, everyone in Illinois would be having about next year's budget would be very different had voters approved the graduated income tax proposal constitutional amendment that Democrats passed and put on the ballot last November. Of course, as you know, they rejected that. Are you okay with the current revenue structure as it is? It's currently a flat tax, whether you make minimum wage or, you know, millions and millions of dollars a year, everybody's paying pretty much the same tax rate, just under 5%. Do you think that revenue structure is okay? Should that change somehow?
Well, the people resoundingly rejected, you know, the idea of changing this system. You know, and this is something that we've seen in other states as well. You know, I think people recognize a certain fairness in the flat tax of, yeah, everybody may be paying the same rate, but the more you make, the more that you pay, right? And so this is something that when people were asked to vote kind of on this measure, resoundingly rejected by 15 points. And so I think that's part of the reason why the governor has made published statements since that point to say that his changes that he's looking at making to this budget in this upcoming year is not going to include an income tax increase. I certainly hope to see that because, you know, that was part of the threat that was used to try to get people to vote for a change in the system, right? There, his lieutenant governor went out there and claimed that there was going to be a 20% increase across the board for everybody on income taxes if people didn't embrace this same system that was put onto the ballot. And so it sounds like the governor has gotten that message. We'll see the details here in a few minutes.
Where should, if it's not through more tax revenue, I mentioned that big deficit earlier, and there is, as you know, a long-term structural deficit in the state of Illinois, where are the big places that cuts can be made, right? We always hear about we should be more efficient and eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse, but I mean, we're talking about billions of dollars in cuts that need to be made. I mean, you could eliminate the entire, you could close every prison in Illinois, and it still would not make up the deficit that's expected just for next year alone. Where should Illinois start cutting?
So we've had proposals on the table for years. I mean, I think that we need to do a forensic audit to make sure that we know where all the money is and how it's being spent. I mean, that effort was done in Kansas some years ago, found tens of millions of dollars. I think it may have been over $100 million, and their budget was a quarter of the size of ours. So I do think that we need to do that kind of deep dive that's necessary. But there's other types of reforms that has been on the table for a while that the Democrats have failed to even consider. Don't even have hearings on them. There's things with group health insurance, Medicaid reform. There's various areas in which we need to look at. You're right in that there's no silver bullet. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. You know, one of the things that we desperately need to do is address our pension crisis, right? We have the worst unfunded pension liability in the country, certainly the worst when it comes to what is owed on a per capita basis. And yet for years, proposals that have been put forward to say, hey, let's get our pension system under control, right? And get it addressed so that we have stability, not just for those systems, but for taxpayers going forward, have been rejected and, you know, not even been seriously considered. These are the types of things that need to be necessary for us to actively consider right now in order to get that long-term stability we desperately need.
I'm glad you brought up pensions, because this is something that everyday people, when you talk to them about Illinois government finances, this is something that comes up a lot. It's a huge part of the budget. One out of every $4 or $5 now in general funds budget money goes to pensions. We got a text on this in our Text the 21st group from one of our listeners, Wilbur in Rantoul, says, it seems our biggest tax burden is pensions. Time to phase them out and let state employees participate in 401ks like the rest of us. Unquote. Now, there was a big change to the pension system, as you know, almost 10 years ago at this point, reduced benefits for people who were hired after that date and later. The Illinois Supreme Court has rejected further changes to pension benefits, you know, for the broader group of Illinois government pensioners. Full disclosure, I should mention, as a state university employee, I work for the University of Illinois. I'm a member of the state university retirement system myself. Are changes to pensions on the Republican agenda this year? What can be done given the Illinois Supreme Court's restrictiveness here?
Well, some of the things that we do, you mentioned that you're a part of the university retirement system. One of the benefits that you have that not any other employee virtually in any other pension system has is the ability to choose to opt out of that pension system and actually own your own retirement. That's only reserved for university employees. That's the type of thing we need to spread to all the different systems. You know, we passed a few years ago, maybe it's 2 or 3 years ago now, Tier 3, which would make further changes for pensions for new employees going forward. There needs to be a technical fix to that in order to be able to comply with IRS requirements. The Democrats won't even consider doing that. That would assist. There's pension buyouts. We tried this in limited fashion, saved hundreds of millions of dollars in doing it. We need to expand that so that those people upon retirement can choose a buyout at a lower amount and then own their retirement after that, which would allow them ownership of their own pension as well as save the state money. These types of things need to be pursued. And unfortunately, just keep kicking the can down the road, that is just not, doesn't work, right? We've got to embrace at least some of these things to begin to get ourselves on the right path.
I'm going to let you go in a couple of minutes here. I know you've got a lot going on today, but just what is the main thing you want to hear from the governor today in his budget address from your standpoint?
Well, the biggest thing I want to hear is that the governor is taking seriously these important reforms that have been on the table for years that are fundamentally necessary in order to get our fiscal house in order, right? That we're not kicking the can down the road. I mean, was it last year, the year before, I'm trying to remember now, he proposed shorting our pension system. I hope he doesn't do that. I'm hopeful that he's going to begin embracing reforms as necessary to get state spending under control, especially since people so resoundingly rejected the idea of going back and reaching into their pockets again. Fundamental reforms are exactly what's necessary to stench the bleeding and to get ourselves on the right path. That's what I'm hoping to hear. And, if it's not there, if it's just kicking the can, if it's just moving, the shells around again, moving money around, that to me will indicate that the governor is not serious in regards to where it is that we need to go as a state.
Last thing I want to ask you, you have been around Springfield for a number of legislative sessions now, but this is your first as one of the four tops, right? One of the leaders. That's what is informally the designation for the House and Senate Democratic and Republican leaders, the four tops. And you know that the way budget negotiations work is often there's this governor gives a speech, there's hearings for a number of months, and then at the end of May, like an undergrad rushing to finish an assignment, there are closed-door negotiations. Sometimes they're bipartisan. Sometimes that breaks down. Democrats unleash a budget. Republicans say, we didn't get a chance to review this. We don't know what's in here. And it goes on a partisan vote. And because Democrats have supermajorities in the House and Senate, they can do that. Do you think things will be different this year? How do you try to make Republicans make sure they are relevant in budget negotiations?
Well, I think it's very important that we start getting to a point of transparency, right? I mean, we have legislative rules that allow for a budget to be kicked out onto a shell bill with simply an hour's notice. These bills will be 2,000, 2,500 pages long. It's impossible to know what's in them. My daughter is actually an intern in the Indiana House right now. She's an intern in the office of the person who's in charge of the Indiana budget for the Indiana House of Representatives. And they have had a budget proposal on the table since early January. They've introduced it. Now there's hearings about it, but the process is extremely transparent. Now, they're going to go through the process and negotiate fine details. We have not historically had that for years. And that is the type of thing that we need to get to in order for people to be able to have the faith that they need to have in Springfield. I firmly believe that part of the big reason why people fundamentally rejected the idea of moving to a progressive income tax was in part due to lack of trust in Springfield. Having appropriate transparency in the budget process where everything is on the table and everybody gets to weigh in on the process and then have a vote where people know exactly what it is they're voting on is going to be a first step in the right direction to helping right the ship here and giving people to get them the opportunity of having trust again in Springfield.
Do you think things are, there's new blood at the table of the four tops and the governor. No one, the only one member of that group has been there more than 2 years at this point. Do you feel optimistic? Are things actually improving in that score?
Well, I certainly hope so. These are the things that I have talked about. I know Leader Durkin in the House has talked about these things as well. I know that there have been some changes, in regards to legislative rules and so forth. Both me and Leader Durkin have proposed other rules changes that we think would help even further to push on this, what I call small D democratic system that we need to have here in Springfield. And so I think that that discussion is ongoing, and the jury's still out on it yet, but I am hopeful that we're going to be able to make progress and get going in the right direction.
Dan McConkie is the Senate Minority Leader. He's a Republican from Hawthorne Woods. Leader McConkie, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Thank you. Good to have you. Good to be on.
Thank you. And we are going to go now immediately. We do need to take a break in a couple minutes, but I want to bring in my last two guests before we do that. Hannah Meisel is State House reporter for NPR Illinois and public radio stations across the state. Also joining us is Amanda Cass, who's Associate Director of the Government Finance Research Center at the University of Illinois at Chicago. She's also affiliated with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, a think tank that is part of the University of Illinois system. Hannah, Amanda, welcome to the 21st. Welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So, let me start with you, Hannah. Just sort of briefly, in about a minute before we go to break, can you sort of sketch out the big picture of where Governor Pritzker is? Sort of what is the big picture of where he's heading, we think, with the budget address based on what we know so far?
Sure. I think Governor Pritzker wakes up every morning and wishes it was still November 3rd, so there could still be a possibility of passing that graduated income tax amendment that, of course, he had campaigned on himself for, 2 years, but ultimately voters rejected in November. He had big plans for that, $3.5 billion he said would bring into the state annually. And of course, COVID hasn't helped. It didn't help that political calculation either. So, I have an embargoed copy of his speech. I don't think I'm giving anything away, where he acknowledges that he had bolder plans for the state budget. But what we know about the budget so far is that this budget will, his proposed budget, of course, it doesn't mean that it's automatically going to become law. And there's definitely fights to be had with lawmakers, but would mostly hold the line on most state spending. It's going to be very difficult.
All right. So that is the brief thumbnail sketch. Awkward timing. We have to take a break for our member stations, though. When we come back, we're going to continue our preview of the governor's budget address, which will be starting at noon on this NPR station. You're listening to the 21st. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We are going to be going to Governor Pritzker delivering the budget address in about 17 minutes from now. It is we're previewing that speech, I should say, with Amanda Cass, who's Associate Director of the Government Finance Research Center at the University of Illinois at Chicago. And also we are speaking with Hannah Meisel, who is State House reporter for NPR Illinois. Sorry, I just have my eye on the live feed over here. It's going to be an unusual address. Normally, this is, Hannah, one of those things where clapping and applause in the State House chamber, not what we're expecting this year, right?
No, in fact, he's not giving his speech from the chamber. He's not giving his speech from his office. He's actually giving his speech from the state fairgrounds, where in 1918, a 100-bed emergency makeshift hospital was constructed during the Spanish flu pandemic. He's going for that symbolism there. He's going for the, this is what state government is built for. This is what government in general is built for very trying times. This is the classic debate that we've been having for decades. What is government for? How big should government be? And so his argument is that this is what state government is made for. And we've had a very difficult, 11 months in Illinois due to the pandemic. And so this is what he's arguing is, this is where state tax dollars should be spent. And in things like you were discussing with Comptroller Mendoza and Leader McConkie, he's making the argument that so-called corporate tax loopholes that's not where state dollars should be spent. It should be spent more on direct services to Illinoisans.
Amanda, can you talk about how bad are Illinois' finances? I think this is something that people are just used to saying year after year. But in fact, it turns out, as we've talked about some this hour, revenue did not drop as much during the COVID-19 mini recession, whatever you want to call that, as it has in past recessions. And that's for a number of factors, in part because a lot of people who are certainly at the higher end of the income spectrum were able to keep working. Apparently, unemployment, the sort of unemployment assistance that people were able to get, sometimes enhanced at a higher dollar amount, that is taxable income, that kept revenue coming in. How bad are Illinois' finances in the short term, at least?
Yeah, so they are, I would say, not rosy. I don't want to be too kind of dire. I think, you know, Illinois had these long-term structural challenges. One is the kind of pension debt payment schedule, and the other is the state's kind of revenue structure. And voters just rejected changing the income tax structure. So that kind of curtails the state's ability to address kind of the long-term structural challenges. Then we've got the kind of COVID-related impacts on the state. And as you said, revenue hasn't kind of fallen as much as people feared, but that's only one side of the ledger. I think something that we need to be kind of really mindful of is how COVID has impacted people and the kind of need for services and the need for greater spending, right? So there's kind of needs across the board. So there's infrastructure needs for schools to make schools kind of safe for people to come to. Some schools had infrastructure needs that were existed way before COVID, right? There's lots of families who are experiencing financial hardship from layoffs, and they need emergency support to avoid experiencing homelessness. And I don't think we have a really good handle on what the kind of full cost would be to meet the spending needs tied to COVID. So that's all to kind of say, you know, it's not rosy.
And what about this federal relief? We've heard, I mentioned earlier this hour that Congressman Krishnamoorthy, I think, is the one who has said that Illinois could see $7.5 billion in, I think that's state and local government aid. Of course, Illinois has gotten some money through past COVID relief packages. Where do we stand in terms of the federal money that has come in the past and that may be coming in the future?
I think maybe is a good word for the future. And I haven't seen a lot of details of what the Biden administration is proposing with state and local government funding. In the past, what was available to states and local governments were kind of two big things. One was the borrowing through the Federal Reserve, which Illinois took advantage of. And that's money that is borrowed on a short-term basis that Illinois has to pay back with interest. The other kind of big chunk of money that state and local governments got was the coronavirus relief fund money. But that money could not be used for revenue shortfalls. It could only be used for spending tied directly to COVID. So we haven't seen kind of fiscal relief to state and local governments in which state and local governments would have kind of complete autonomy over.
And Hannah, what do you think? I don't know if you have any further details on the corporate loopholes. I mean, I think you and I were in the same embargoed budget briefing this morning. So with senior government officials, we're not supposed to talk about that. But there have been some published reports about what Governor Pritzker is talking about in terms of trying to make up this $3 billion shortfall in state tax collections expected into next year.
That's right. He is, you know, all of these things he has to present to the legislature, and there is no guarantee that the legislature is going to go along with all of them, especially because, you know, businesses, business groups, you know, voters can turn around and say, you know, hey, I thought you supported businesses, because, you know, these when they passed when they became law initially, it's not like anyone referred to them as corporate tax loopholes. I mean, maybe a few people, but they were referred to as tax incentives or tax credits or, you know, things that would build the economy. And so it's hard, you know, especially if you're in a swing district, to turn around and say, actually, I believed in this 2 years ago, but I don't believe it anymore. But it's things like, you know, I'm looking at this chart, and again, we're not really supposed to talk about it, but I will take one. People might remember 3.5 years ago, there was this big fight over school funding in the summer of 2017 after the state budget impasse had ended. And part of the deal that ended up getting done was this private school tax credit fund. Kind of hard to explain, but, you know, people could send, you know, send money to this fund, you know, and have a tax write-off, and it would fund, you know, scholarships for private schools across Illinois. And so what
I've gotten a lot of emails about this from the Catholic high school that I attended, encouraging me to take advantage of the state's tax break. Yes.
You know, if you remember during his campaign, the governor said a couple times that he actually wanted to eliminate this tax credit program completely. He got a lot of flack for that. But he, you know, and he eventually kind of reversed his position on it. But what he is proposing now is to reset that tax credit from 75% to 40%, and then allow people to instead claim more of the credit on their federal taxes, which they can't currently do. That's one example. I mean, there's a lot of things on here, and again, we can't talk to him about them for another.
Yeah, some of this though has been covered in other published reports, though, and I'm fine if other news outlets have either broken the embargo or done their own sleuthing to put it out there. I'm okay talking about that. I guess.
And Brian,
go ahead, please.
I just want to jump in and say, kind of about this, the question of tax expenditures loopholes, however you want to phrase it. You know, as my friend Chris Goodman kind of put it, tax expenditures and loopholes, these are just a less transparent form of public spending, right? And so in a kind of situation like Illinois is in right now, in which there's no good choices, right? And we should be kind of thinking about these tax expenditures and what are we getting from them? What we should be thinking of them as spending and evaluating whether we should be spending it on tax credits for people to attend private schools versus other things which are really needed at this moment to meet, the kind of dire situation that families who have had layoffs are facing.
You know, I'm so glad you mentioned that, Amanda. And we only have about 5 minutes left before we need to take a break and then go to the governor's budget address. But I think this idea is not, this is a way that sort of maybe can help people reframe the way they think about government expenditures. And I should say this is something that's a little more popular to do on the left than the right, but this idea of calling them tax expenditures, maybe you can just expound on that briefly. The idea being people, when they think they pay taxes to the government, that's my money. If I get to keep more of it, if a business gets to keep more of it, that's their money. The framing of a tax expenditure is this is money the government could be spending on, helping kids go to preschool for free or something like that, as opposed to letting a business, keep money that it would otherwise pay in taxes. Do I have that about right?
Right. These are the kind of tax expenditures. This is money that the government is not collecting because it's created a kind of carve out with the idea that there's going to be a public good generated from it. Right. So, for example, there's tax credits sometimes to incentivize job creation, right? And so the state could spend that money on a kind of jobs training program, right? Or it could say to a corporation, instead of paying this amount of money in taxes, you create the job, you hire people, and if you demonstrate that you've hired those people, you don't have to pay some percentage of taxes.
And we've seen this backfire in cases like Sears, which obviously has had a lot of bankruptcy and closures, was a huge beneficiary of these sort of tax credits a number of years ago.
Or just think, you know, kind of in our region, the kind of Foxconn debacle.
Sure. Well, just about 1 minute left, and we are then going to take a break and go to the governor's live budget address. Hannah Meisel and Amanda Katz will be joining me after that as well for some more recap and analysis. But Amanda, big picture, it sounds like, you know, the Illinois budget, for as long as I've been following it, has been held together with bent coat hangers and bubble gum. It doesn't sound like that's going to change, at least not this year.
No, unfortunately, it doesn't. You know, again, voters rejected the fair tax amendment. And I just want to kind of point out that most other states who have an income tax have a graduated structure. Illinois is in the minority for having a flat structure. And the governor there has said that they don't kind of, he doesn't want to put forward just a big income tax rate increase. So like, there's not real options for big structural reform at this juncture. So I think we're going to see more of the same of kind of cobbling things together for the short term, with these long-term issues remaining.
And Hannah, last question to you in about less than a minute, I'd say. What are the big things you are looking for out of the governor's address, and as well as how lawmakers receive it today?
You know, prior to the, you know, in the fall, when the governor was still campaigning on his graduated income tax amendment, his allies warned, oh, you know, if this doesn't pass, we're going to need an across-the-board income tax increase, and then the day after it failed, the governor came out pretty angry, you know, saying that they're going to be painful cuts. And this budget really doesn't have either. But I'm looking to see what he highlights as you know, budget cuts, and what he highlights as things that he feels as if the public is going to side with him on. We need to increase this. And definitely, you know, school funding, the governor doesn't want to increase that for the second year in a row. And I think that's going to be a huge fight this spring.
Okay. Hannah Meisel is State House reporter for NPR Illinois. We've also been speaking with Amanda Cass, who is Associate Director of the Government Finance Research Center at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Also, she's affiliated with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. Hannah, Amanda, thanks for speaking with me today on the 21st.
Talk to you afterward.
Yeah. And I thanks. For stations that are staying with us for live coverage of the governor's budget address, that will begin, or at least is scheduled to begin, in about 2 minutes. The 21st is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Chantal Vaca is our engagement producer. Our interns are Zainab Qureshi and Brielle Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.